Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, CFRO. I am your co-host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Joanne Chang.
Hi, everyone.
And our technician, John Pranger. Today, we will be presenting travel tips and recommendations for compassionate eating, part two, on Seattle this time. And for our feature interview, we bring Dr. Will Tuttle back on the show, author of the best-selling book, The World Peace Diet. We had him here last month, and there was just so much more that we had wanted to ask him, but didn't have the time. So he has graciously agreed to come back on the show to share more of his great wisdom with us on some more of the issues covered in his book concerning our human relationship with animals. Today marks the last day of our spring membership drive. If you've been listening to the show for the last few weeks, you've probably heard our heartfelt pleas on the air asking you to please support the Animal Voices Radio Show and Vancouver Cooperative Radio by taking out a membership of any monetary amount. Once again, if you like the programming that you listen to weekly on our show, we ask you to please make a donation to keep Animal Voices running on the airwaves of Vancouver Radio and, of course, broadcast live on the internet. You can do so by either calling the station today right after our program at 604-684-8494, extension 230, and we'll be happy to take your pledge. Or go online at cooperadio.org to find out how you can make your donation via the internet or by mailing in a membership form. We really do appreciate your support. As we are a nonprofit cooperative, we do rely on financial donations to keep the station running. No amount is too small, so whatever you can afford, we will be greatly thankful, and so will the animals. Once again, you can go to cooperadio.org or call 604-684-8494, extension 230 at 1 o'clock p.m. today. And now I wanted to talk about an amazing dining experience that I had last week at Vancouver's newest completely vegan restaurant, The Loving Hut. The Loving Hut is located at 546 West Broadway at Broadway and Cambie. I went to the Earth Save Dine Out there last week, as I've been really looking forward to trying out this place since I first heard about it 2 months ago. And wow, was I ever impressed. Have you been there yet, Joanne?
No, I haven't. Okay. No, we went before it was really officially open, and then the hours were sporadic, so every time we went, it was closed.
Oh, well, it's definitely open for business regularly now. Right. I do recommend it. First of all, Earth Save organized dine-outs at various restaurants throughout Metro Vancouver are a great way to try out the vegan selections that a restaurant has to offer. And when I saw the many different courses that were going to be served at this dinner event, all for a very reasonable $20, I knew I had to go. The Loving Hut is a chain of restaurants located worldwide in the United States and in Canada, with this one being only the second one in Canada, the other one being in Toronto. However, they have 119 locations all around the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I know. Now we have one here in Vancouver. According to their website, The Loving Hut was created with a vision that all beings could live in peace, love, and harmony with each other and the planet. They say they offer cuisine at a great price that is all animal-free, made with wholesome vegan ingredients, offering an accessible starting point for those who want to make the noble transition to a plant-based diet. I did find this to be really quite true. While I've noticed that many of the menus of many of the Loving Huts around the world are very Asian fare-based, this Loving Hut in Vancouver offers a menu consisting mainly of North American comfort foods.
That's interesting. I thought it was a Chinese restaurant or something.
Well, it seems like all the Loving Huts around the world, they all offer different things, right? So a lot of them are in Asia, though. So these foods that, you know, just reading about them are sure to make your mouth water. I found the ingredients to be of high fresh quality and the flavors to be delicious. And of course, it's so nice to be at a restaurant where you automatically know that everything there is animal friendly and that no living beings were tortured or killed to enjoy this hearty and utterly satisfying food. We started off with their soup of the day, which was a delicious pumpkin soup. And then that was followed by two different salads, their rainbow salad and a vegan Caesar salad. The Caesar salad dressing was quite unique and extremely garlicky and was totally delicious, as was the rainbow salad.
Don't order that on a date.
That's a good point. That was followed by a plate of nachos covered in melted non-dairy diet cheese and veggies. And just then, when you're starting to get full, all the main courses started to come in one by one. These included pizza slices for three different kinds of pizza using diet cheese, a delicious wrap of vegetables, soy chicken strips and ranch dressing, a jardine chicken or portobello mushroom burger with fries, and an amazing brown rice bowl with numerous veggies, fake shrimp, tofu, chicken strips, trips and your choice of either miso gravy or teriyaki sauce as a dressing. I can't say enough about how much food there was. There was definitely enough to provide around 4 full meals per person. So at $20 each, that is excellent value. I took home lots of leftovers, which lasted me for all my meals for the next 2 days. The owners were so generous and the servings themselves are very generous. All in all, great food, great prices, all vegan, and I highly recommend it. Check out lovinghut.ca for their location and hours of operation. So, Joanne, you had wanted to talk to us about the cow ribbing campaign.
Yes,
please tell us all
do.
About it.
So Mother Day is just around the corner, and I'd like to share with you a little campaign called the Cow Ribbon Campaign that helps to raise awareness and honor the mothers in the dairy industry. As many of our listeners already know, in order for cows to produce milk, they must give birth. And so every year, a dairy cow has to be impregnated through artificial insemination, a very gross process, actually. Mm-hmm. And as soon as her baby is born, they're dragged away from her so that humans can drink her milk. Her female calves are taken from her, but kept by the farm to become the next generation of dairy cows. But the male calves are usually useless to the dairy industry and so are taken to the slaughterhouse at 1 or 2 days old to make what's called bob veal, or they are locked up in tiny crates for 6 months, deprived of exercise, and then taken to slaughter to make what's called fancy veal. Some male calves are just tossed in the garbage if they're deemed worthless. A few months ago, the Humane Society of the United States released an undercover investigation footage of an organic veal slaughterhouse in Vermont. No surprise, the calves at the slaughterhouse were all newborn males from the dairy industry. One calf was seen in the footage, in the undercover footage, suckling at the hand of the person who slit his throat. In a previous show, I've shared the story of my friend Mario, the lucky cow who now lives at Farm Sanctuary. Mario was a male born into the dairy industry, and like all males, he went to market when he was just 2 days old. The poor boy was born with a leg injury, so no veal farmer wanted to buy him. And since he failed to fetch any money at the market, he was tossed on top of a pile of dead animals, just like garbage. Luckily for Mario, the dump truck driver who was supposed to take him to the rendering plant did not have the heart to throw him away, and Mario got a new lease on life at a sanctuary. So sad are the stories of the babies, but sadder still are the stories of the mothers whose suffering we appreciate only in the form of milk, yogurt, cheese, and ice cream. A dairy cow can bellow for days, sometimes weeks after she gives birth, because her baby was taken from her. She searches for her baby and becomes hysterical, but no amount of sorrow will bring her baby back from the slaughterhouse, and her only choice is to mourn while being hooked up to a milking machine. And 2 months after this traumatic ordeal, she will be forced into another pregnancy. The cycle will repeat until her body is too taxed to give birth again, and she too will be deemed worthless and taken to slaughter. If this bothers you as it does me, I urge you to go to cowribbon.com and order your cow ribbon pin to wear on Mother's Day in honor of the mothers who never got to experience the joy of motherhood. The best part about this cow ribbon is that it's a conversation piece. Mm-hmm. Every time I have my cow ribbon on, someone inevitably asks what the ribbon is for. Most people I've spoken to are shocked to find out about the cruelty and exploitation inherent in the dairy industry. From the website, you can also send Mother's Day e-cards to friends and moms to raise awareness about this issue. You can even read stories and watch videos about animals who have been rescued from the dairy industry. So please wear your cow ribbon on May 9th and join thousands of compassionate animal lovers in showing support for all mothers. That website, again, is cowribbon.com.
I've been wearing my cow ribbon, and it definitely is a conversation starter. I think it's a great campaign. And not only that, it's an attractive little ribbon to wear with the little cow imprints on it, I guess you can call it. Yeah, it's a really, really neat campaign. Thank you, Joanne.
You're welcome.
Now for our upcoming events. This first event is tonight, Friday, April the 23rd at 7:30 p.m., Veggie Drinks Night, hosted by Ursave Canada. Ursave wants to promote this event to bring hundreds of like-minded people together to meet. So this is happening. These events happen every month. Happens at Shavana Lounge at 2340 West 4th Avenue in Vancouver. This is your chance to run with your own kind or in the circles you'd like to run in, that is vegetarians, vegans, flexitarians, pescatarians, etc. These monthly veggie drinks gatherings happen at Shavana Lounge, featuring a veggie fresh sheet with specials for these drinks nights, as well as regular vegan appetizers and entrees on the menu, reasonably priced drinks, and comfortable seats. Non-alcoholic drinks are available for those who don't care for alcohol. To find out more and to register, please go to meetup.com and look up Vancouver Meatless Meetup. That is M-E-A-T for meatless. Tomorrow, Saturday, April the 24th at 4 o'clock p.m., the Eyes Wide Open film series presents Meet the Truth, hosted by Liberation BC. This is on the lower level of the Vancouver Public Library at 350 West Georgia Street in Vancouver. Presented by Dutch politician Marianne Thiem, Meet the Truth is the very first documentary to address the relationship between livestock farming and climate change. Admission is free to this event. On Sunday, April the 25th, that's this Sunday, another wonderful sounding vegan secret supper will be held in Vancouver. The dinner happens at 5:30 p.m. and 8 o'clock p.m. Secret suppers are home prepared meals served in people's homes for a set fee in a secret location. On the menu this time, it's their first four-course meal. It sounds amazing. Roasted butternut and apple soup with chipotle apple reduction, beet apple and hazelnut spring rolls with a pear Dijon sauce, quinoa portobello and pesto potato wrapped roll served with sautéed kale and a fennel portobello sauce. And for dessert, hazelnut chocolate mousse pie with blackberry balsamic reduction and lime coconut cream. This is all $30. Email vegansecretsupper@gmail.com for reservations. And finally, next Tuesday, April the 27th at 6:30 p.m., I believe it starts, is our Earth Save Readers Group dinner meeting. Now, as of just yesterday, our location that we had planned for it had to be canceled. So I do think a new location will be chosen today. So please join us for this dinner meeting where we will be sharing some good vegan food and we'll finish discussing Jonathan Safran Foer's book, Eating Animals. You don't have to have read the book to join in on the gathering and some interesting discussion, share and eat food, and socialize with like-minded people. So as I said, for the location, it was going to be a potluck at a person's home. She can't host anymore. So we're either going to have it at a different person's home or at a restaurant. So to find out more, and as soon as I find out, I'm going to post it on the Vancouver Meatless Meetup group. Just go to meetup.com and go to that group, and you can find out the new details of the new location. So no matter where it will be, I can pretty much guarantee you that the food will be delicious and the company will be great, and I will be there too for sure. If you have an animal or a vegetarian related event coming up that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, which is called Animal Voices Vancouver. I just want to remind our listeners, you're listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver. And now I wanted to talk about, I have a segment entitled Travel Tips and Recommendations for Compassionate Eating. I had a part one presented a few months ago, if you remember that. This is part two for Seattle. So one day passing through trips to Seattle have been a less than frequent but more than seldom occurrence for me in the last few years due to the fact that on various trips that I've taken to the United States, Seattle has been the most economic location to travel from via air transportation. So whenever I'm stopping by Seattle, I always try to incorporate a bit of time there, whether it's coming from or going back home to Canada, which usually means taking advantage of the great selection of vegan food that is available in the city that we just can't get in Canada. It's always a treat to try out new foods and discover new products and tastes that we aren't used to getting at home. It should be noted as well that when you're living so close to Washington as we do, a voyage to Seattle can also make a very doable day trip, being only a 2.5-hour drive away. So here are some of my Seattle compassionate animal-friendly food recommendations based on my last trip there, which was a few weeks ago when I went to Seattle Veg Fest for the day. First of all, with the dollar practically on par as it is these days, the savings that you will normally get by shopping in the States are even more so now, and it's an especially good time to do grocery shopping across the border when you can. On this last trip to Seattle, I was doing a lot of price comparisons, and the notable savings were definitely there. I don't think it makes sense to spend a tank against gas to go to Seattle just for grocery shopping. However, if you're going to be there anyways, grocery shopping is definitely one activity you'll want to partake in. And grocery shopping is what we did. We hit three favorite stores in a row, starting at Trader Joe's and then Whole Foods and then Sidecar, which is Seattle's awesome vegan food store. To start with Trader Joe's, there are three of these specialty grocery stores in Seattle, each situated in a different area of the city, so there should be one easy to find near you. What I like about this store are the cheap, cheap prices and the variety of food products that you just won't find anywhere else. Their website succinctly sums it up, which says at Trader Joe's, you won't find a lot of branded items. Instead, you'll find unconventional and interesting products in the Trader Joe's label, as well as everyday dish basics. We buy products we think are winners, and that'll find a following among our customers. Sometimes it's a product we intend to stock as long as it sells well, and sometimes we buy a product which is limited in supply, sell through it, and you won't find it again. It's all part of the shopping adventure at Trader Joe's. And that's what I like to partake in when I go grocery shopping in a strange land, a veritable shopping adventure. It's so fun to peruse the aisles and compare the prices to those back home and to come upon items that you just won't see anywhere else. Mm-hmm. This last time I noticed that their Earth Balance vegan margarine was only $3.75, whereas here I think it's about $6 now or over $6. They had containers of organic agave nectar for $3.99 and non-organic for $2.99, whereas the same in Vancouver will cost you about $7 at least. Their Luna bars were on sale for only 99 cents each, which I grossly stocked up on. And get this, I found a product that I had scoured the stores in Vancouver recently for and could not find anywhere: canned crispy onions. Also, I was impressed with their large selection of whole wheat and non-gluten pastas, including all kinds of pasta shapes and good size packages for well under $2 each. And in their packaged dry goods section, they had bags of beautiful dried hibiscus flowers for sale. I had only dreamed about these edible flowers in the past from my gourmet vegan cookbooks, and here they were for sale at Trader Joe's. Imagine that. For a six-page list of many of the hundreds of vegan products they carry, you can visit www.traderjoes.com. Next up on the itinerary was Whole Foods. We do have a couple of Whole Foods grocery stores here in Vancouver now, but the ones in the States are quite a bit different in that they carry a whole slew of different products that you can't find here in Canada. Many of these American products are not available in the stores in Canada due to labeling issues. So if you want to purchase vegan food products such as field roast, vegan white chocolate chips, or the new diet non-dairy cheese, you are often only left with the option of mail ordering these items with very expensive shipping costs or crossing the border.
Or carnivore.
Yeah, which is almost at the border for me, unfortunately. Or crossing the border to shop at a large natural food store such as Whole Foods. There are two Whole Foods stores in Seattle. The one I always seem to go to is at Roosevelt Square. It's a great place to find those usually hard to find products that are just so abundant in the land of plenty here at Whole Foods in the U.S. of A. They are the first stores in North America to carry the retail non-dairy cheese diet packages as of April 1st, which they were selling at about $4.50 each.
Now.
Yeah, all the Whole Foods stores.
Really? So are they in the big chunks, the big bags that we have here?
No, I can't remember how many ounces the bags were, but they're just kind of like regular shredded cheese bags that you'll find in the stores for other types of cheese. They also carry many different obscure organic baking ingredients that my friend Denise was able to find here and only here. And I like that I can purchase Tofutti cream cheese here in the low $3 range rather than nearly $5 in Canada. The best deal they had for me on this very lucky day was that they were selling the Asian Kitchen rice noodle soup packages that I love so much, which are usually priced at $1.29 here in Vancouver at least, if you can even find them anymore. At Whole Foods in Seattle, they were on sale for 50% off their regular price at a mere 50 cents each, which is the cheapest I have ever seen them. Needless to say, I stocked up on these convenient soup packages that serve well to carry me through the long nights at work. Finally, another main difference with the Whole Foods in Seattle versus the Whole Foods in Vancouver is that the Seattle store, and I think probably all the U.S. stores, have a much better deli and cold and hot fresh food selection for self-service. I have found that stopping at Whole Foods on the way to the SeaTac Airport is a great idea for purchasing some quick, fresh, ready-to-eat meals that will last you on the plane in lieu of the lack of vegan food for purchase on airplanes these days. Well, the self-service and deli animal product-free food selection in Vancouver is quite meager and unimpressive. The Seattle store offers a delicious array of variety of foods in a rainbow of colors and flavors, salads and grains and tofus and vegetables. I remember purchasing an amazing Thai curry eggplant there several months ago, which was to die for, as is their marinated tofu and their vegan Caesar salad. Yum. And it may not be cheap, but it's certainly worthwhile for a wholesome and filling meal while en route to your final destination. You can conveniently eat your meal, too, in your lap while in the car or sitting on the plane.
You know, I used to live in the States, and any Whole Foods you go to, you can expect to find, like, three different varieties of muffins, vegan muffins. Mm-hmm. And here, like, you can't find it. It's like
more cupcakes, too, there, it seems
yeah,
like.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're good. They're mm-hmm. not, like, the healthy, you know, brown stuff that they sell here.
Yeah. The disgusting healthy stuff. Yes. They're not like that. Finally, a shopping trip to Seattle is not complete without a stop to Sidecar for Pig's Peace.
Yes.
The quaintest little vegan grocery shop that you ever did see. Sidecar is the ancillary project of the Pig's Peace Animal Sanctuary located in northern Washington, about an hour north of Seattle and an hour south of Vancouver, and is all about kindness and compassion to animals. Every product sold in the store is in fact vegan, and it's such a treat to stop by the store every chance I can get to check out the items on sale and to stock up on favorites that are pretty much impossible to find anywhere else. I mean, at what other retail store nearby can you find cans of vegan haggis, for example? Not that I've ever bought that.
No. I've actually had it. It's not too bad.
Oh, really? I've just looked at it at the can and kind of went, oh, wow. Some of the products that you can buy here that normally we in Canada can only drool about while viewing them on the internet are, but not limited to, Parma, the delicious and very nutritious vegan Parmesan alternative that I am quite addicted to, a variety of delectably chewy Liz Lovely cookies, Primal Strips, the vegan jerky that comes in an assortment of distinct and tempting flavors, such as mesquite lime and hickory smoked, Sweet and Sarah vegan marshmallows, which are to die for without the animals having to die for them, and Cheesely, a tangy cheese alternative with its own loyal following of fake cheese connoisseurs. These examples are just barely scratching the surface, as there is just so much more to be found at Sidecar for Pig's Peace. You really have to check it out for yourself. They have a great selection of vegan dry goods and frozen foods, and a very decent selection of vegan cookbooks, clothing, pet food, and beauty products as well. So if you are following an animal-free diet and lifestyle and are interested in discovering really cool vegan food products, a trip to Sidecar for Pig's Peace while in Seattle is an absolute must. To find out more about the store and the Pig's Peace Sanctuary, you can go to their website at www.sidecarforpigspeace.com. There are a lot of other places in Seattle that I'd love to go on and on about, but we will have to save those for another day. Mm-hmm. And those are some of my recommendations for animal-friendly food shopping in Seattle, Washington.
Now I feel like I have to go make a trip to Seattle and buy all this delicious food.
Yeah, definitely. It's so good there. It's such a fun treat to go.
Yeah, no kidding. So next up is the Animal Voices News. As part of their Heart Healthy campaign, Basil has come out with a vegan line of margarines. Most people by now probably have seen the commercial.
Mm-hmm. I was shocked when I saw it.
I know.
I was just lying there on the couch, and then suddenly, Basil!
Vegan!
Like, whoa, what is this world coming to?
I know, it's great to see a supermarket brand of margarine touting the heart-healthy benefits of a vegan spread. The advertising, like you said, Allison, clearly uses the word vegan as a selling point.
Yeah, it's on the package too, very clear.
Who knew? The vegan market could be coveted by a big mainstream brand like Basil.
Yeah, so they're definitely marketing towards a certain niche market there. Mm-hmm. People like you and me.
Yeah, maybe we're not so niche anymore.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, this week's Law & Order SVU went inside a slaughterhouse. The promo blurb read, Detective Olivia Benson goes undercover at a meat plant to solve the murder of a woman who was filming an unflinching expose of meat.
Hmm.
According to Dawn Watch, there is no newspaper that has as many readers or news shows that has as many viewers as SVU.
Didn't know that.
Undoubtedly, this episode reached a large audience and hopefully got them thinking about the meat on their plates.
That's interesting. I don't watch that show, but I definitely want to look this one up and see what it's all about.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
I'm just curious.
I heard that the animal rights person was not the villain this time, so they were actually... Mm-hmm.
I know that the show Bones as well also did a slaughterhouse investigation episode over a year ago. It's about a year and 4 months ago. And that's because Emily Deschanel, who is a vegan and on the show, she's one of the producers of the show.
Yeah.
She pushed for that.
That was a good episode as well. PETA launched a new campaign featuring a photo of late B. Arthur. The ad read, "Death couldn't stop this golden girl from fighting the Golden Arch's cruel slaughter practices." A longtime PETA campaigner against factory farm abuse, B. Arthur left money to PETA in her will, and were using it to pursue McDonald's to switch to a less violent USDA-approved chicken slaughter method. So she's still fighting for animals in her grave.
Good for her.
Yeah. Breast Cancer Foundation Susan G. Komen has teamed up with KFC. Yes, you heard right. Help make the largest single donation to end breast cancer forever, the campaign urges. KFC will donate money to the charity at a rate of 50 cents for every special pink bucket of chicken sold over the next month. Never mind that eating KFC probably causes cancer and leads to an early death. Susan G. Komen wants you to go and buy a pink bucket of heart-stopping deep-fried breasts to save your breasts.
Yeah, I read about this last night. There's an article in the Huffington Post online, huffingtonpost.com. Very interesting that they do analyze that. Well, let's see. There's this and this and this from KFC fried chicken that causes cancer.
Of course.
This organization that's, you know, supposedly against cancer is promoting foods that cause cancer. How outrageous is that? I mean, it's crazy.
And who knows what's in the secret ingredients, more cancer-causing.
I can't confirm this, but this article claims that this Susan Komen Foundation is actually a front for pharmaceutical companies, but I can't say any more about that other than what I read.
Like John will probably tell you that, you know, they're not really looking for a cure, are they?
He nods. Yeah. Anyways, that story just shocked me. I couldn't believe it. It's crazy. Like, how misaligned can your values be?
Right.
KFC is quite, I don't know. I don't want to say anything too bad about it, but come on, you know what KFC is all about. If you've been listening to our show and that, and it's quite disgusting. Anyways, we're going to move on to our feature interview right now. We are pleased to bring back Dr. Will Tuttle again on the show again. We had him on last month and, only had time to touch upon some of the many different subjects of his best-selling book, The World Peace Diet, which has been called one of the most important books of the 21st century. Dr. Will Tuttle is an award-winning speaker, educator, author, musician, and Zen Buddhist master. His music, writings, and presentations focus on creativity, intuition, and compassion. Hello, Dr. Tuttle, and welcome again to the Animal Voices show.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Thank you for coming back. So I would like to ask you about some more of the various topics that are covered in your book, The World Peace Diet. This book really covers a vast range of information and philosophy surrounding our human relationships with animals and the way we treat them. The main theme of the book concerns the animals that we use for food. I'm wondering if you could tell us, though, about your own transitional story. How did you go from growing up as a youth eating meat and dairy and killing fish to the person you've become today in terms of your views on the human relationship with animals?
Briefly, I was born and raised in a family that ate the typical Western diet of lots of meat, dairy products, and egg. My mother told me that I remember I asked her, you know, does everyone eat the way we eat? And she said, yes, everyone eats the way we eat. And so I thought that's what everybody ate. And then she said, well, there are vegetarians. And she said it in a way that made me think they lived on another planet somewhere. Because I just, you know, growing up I grew up in New England, actually, in the 1950s and early 60s. And I never, in my entire life growing up, had anyone who talked about vegetarianism or who modeled that at all. And I went away to a summer camp where we killed our own chickens and killed our own cow.
What kind of a camp was that?
Really, It's pretty amazing. Yeah, it was called Camp Challenge. But the idea was, you know, it was really good in a way because it showed me at least pull back the curtain and let me see the violence that's inherent in animal-based foods. Although I never at that point could question the underlying mentality of our culture. I just, you know, I didn't think we were doing anything wrong. I was well indoctrinated by the time I was 12 or 13 years old and knew beyond the shadow of a doubt that animals don't have a soul. They're put here for us to eat by God, you know, and if you don't eat them, you'll die of a protein deficiency. And, you know, so that's really what it was. And it wasn't until I got to college in Maine that I started to hear a little bit about vegetarianism, and actually, I never met one, but I heard that they existed, and that some of the, you know, that there were even some, people in California.
There was a rumor somewhere about these so-called vegetarians.
Yeah, there was kind of like rumors.
They're kind of like Martians.
And, right, exactly, like, you know, some other planet. But I felt this inner sort of calling to, read books on Eastern spirituality and question, it was during the Vietnam War, and just sort of questioning everything that the corporations and the military industrial complex were doing. And I decided to meditate more and try to, you know, just understand what's life all about. And as part of that, I went on this spiritual pilgrimage where I actually left home and started walking. And just with my brother, we would go about 15 miles a day, and we just headed west. We thought we would try to walk all the way to California. And we got as far as Buffalo, New York. And when we got there, we headed south, and we walked for many months, and we eventually ended up for about a month and a half or so in a community called The Farm in Tennessee, which was mostly people from California, and they were totally eating a plant-based diet. They didn't eat any meat or dairy products. They didn't call it vegan because no one had heard of that word back then. But that's what it was, because they were doing it for compassion for animals.
What year was it?
And that was 1975.
Okay.
And so I never ate meat again in my life. And a few years later, I did move to California, and I started hearing more and learning more about the cruelty involved in dairy products and eggs. And so then I gave those up about 30 years ago, about 1980. And right a few years after that, I went to Korea and lived as a Zen monk in Korea, and I experienced firsthand living in a community that had been vegan for 650 years. Mm-hmm. And so that was a really solidified the whole thing for me. So for me, the way I was able to transition from eating animal-based foods to plant-based foods, to vegan diet, was through community, you know, through other people, and actually being in a community where that's what people did. So I was really lucky, I think, in that sense, that I was able to actually live with other people, and there was no question. We all eat meat, you know. I mean, we all eat meat-free, you know, vegan meals. And at the farm, there was a good about 1,000 people. You know, it was a big community, so it was great. It was about 100 kids there when I was there that were all vegan. Most of them, a lot of them, were vegan from birth. And they were doing great. You know, they were healthy, they were happy, people were strong. And I realized just directly by living with these people that one does not have to eat meat, dairy products, and eggs to be healthy at all. And that was a great, you know, living example of it.
Well, Dr. Tuttle, you say that veganism is the essential healing force that our culture desperately needs. Why is that?
Because the mentality underlying our food choices, it's sort of invisible. It's a subtext of every meal, is a mentality that basically forces all of us to participate in these rituals of disconnectedness, where we disconnect from nature, from other living beings, from our own natural sense of being part of a benevolent universe, and we disconnect from the a sense of inclusiveness and compassion that I think really are our true nature. I think at a deep level we all yearn to live a creative life where we're fulfilling something that's meaningful. And our sense of meaning comes from helping others and being part of something bigger than just our own narrow self-centered concerns. So I think what veganism does is it questions this underlying mentality of violence, of exclusiveness, and of commodification of life and reductionism at a level that's not only very profound from a philosophical point of view, but very practical from an actual behavioral point of view. We're actually not just theoretically questioning things, we're practically questioning things. And in questioning things, we're voting with our lives, with our dollars, for compassion and kindness and inclusion and caring and allowing other beings to be free. That's, I think, why it's so vitally important. And really, if we don't embrace veganism as a culture, I don't see ever survive on this planet, because this mentality of disconnectedness and violence is just devastating.
I totally agree with that. There's so many interesting topics in your book pertaining to animals and food choices that I'd like us to talk about. For example, you say that we become what we eat, and there's more toxin coming into our bodies from animal foods than from plant foods. Can you explain that to us, please?
Just briefly, the toxins essentially concentrate in animal foods, and this is very easy to understand because, for one thing, there are really no laws regulating how many pesticides we can spray on crops that are not fed to humans. If they're just fed to livestock, you can pretty much do whatever you want. So pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, and other toxic chemicals are sprayed on corn, soybeans, oats, wheat, and other things that are fed then to animals. And the animals eat these foods, and as we all know, these pesticides will concentrate in the fatty tissues of any mammals or birds or fish. That's what happens. They concentrate in the fat, and especially in the eggs and in the mammary secretions of mammals. And so you get a load of toxins from the food, but also most people don't realize it, that animals who are raised for food in North America are fattened up with other animal-based foods. Like you have chickens, for example, eating huge amounts of fish and of other chickens and other and pigs. And there's something called a rendering plant, where the stuff that's not really suitable for humans to eat is taken there and it's cooked, and then they make something they say enriches the feed. It's basically all the fat and bone, everything's just sort of chopped up and ground up and cooked. And then, so there's a lot of toxins in that, and that concentrates the toxins even more, and then they feed that back to animals. Most people don't realize that cows, for example, eat more fish in North America than human beings do. They eat a lot of fish in order to make them give more milk. So the pesticides concentrate in all these ways, plus they feed feces to animals and a lot of other things that are very toxic, essentially. So there's a whole there's a lot to it. There's formaldehyde. There's other things that are put in. There's hormones are given to the animals. There's hormone residues. There are Campylobacter, Listeria, and a whole lot of different bacteria and viral contamination that's routine, and it's driven into the flesh of the animals by the high-powered hot water washing that they're using now, which just drives it even deeper into the cells of the flesh that people are eating. So it's it really, if you explore, I have a whole chapter on it, but that's briefly it.
Yeah, and I know you also talk about eating the vibrations of anxiety, pain, terror, despair, and panic. That is basically what these animals are experiencing in their last moments of life. And I find that to be a really interesting subject. I've read it before too, but you cover that topic really well. And it is true that, you know, the animals release adrenaline before they're slaughtered, right? And that's present in the meat that we eat. So there's actually some scientific basis there. Okay. Sorry. I just wanted to ask you if you could elaborate more on specifically why cow's milk is toxic to humans. You've spoken about the pesticides and fungicides and all that, but what else do you have to tell us about that?
Yes. The one thing I'll just mention, following up on what you just said, is that part, I think, of the orientation of our culture is a mentality of materialism. We don't want to look at a being and see a life there that wants to live and express itself. We'd rather just see a piece of meat, you know, something that can be used. And so this materialism pervades our culture, and we have a system of knowing, which we call science, which has this materialistic orientation. Mm-hmm. And so we, when someone talks about that we're eating pain and terror and fear, we say, no, that couldn't be true because you can't weigh pain, terror, and fear on a scale, so they must not exist. But I think the wisdom traditions of many cultures have shown that these are vibratory realities, and I think we can all feel it in our actual experience. And a cow on a dairy, there's a couple of things. One is she's enslaved, she's confined, she has her baby stolen every 9 months after she gives birth. She's reimpregnated again, and after 9 months of carrying the baby is stolen, and she's reimpregnated again. And so there's this constant sense of loss and despair and powerlessness of being a slave, mm-hmm. and being abused. And I think that essentially is unavoidable in dairy products. But besides that, there's casein, for example. I mean, mm-hmm. casein is the main protein in cow's milk, and it's a very large, cumbersome molecule that we do not have we don't have rennin, which is an enzyme that little baby cows have to break casein down. And so there's a lot of evidence that casein is extremely toxic for us as human beings. And most of the illnesses that little kids have, runny noses and earaches and allergies of various kinds and tonsillitis and appendicitis and all these things, T. Colin Campbell, the famed nutrition expert, has said that he believes casein is the most toxic carcinogen to which humans are routinely exposed. So you have just whether the milk is organic or not, whatever, you still have casein, as well as, of course, lactose, which a lot of people are lactose intolerant. And then you have the concentration of physical pesticides, like I talked about earlier as well.
Right. Regarding that casein, it's in everything. It's not just dairy products, but, I look at the ingredients list for things like normal granola bars or whatever, any packaged products. Casein's in there, and I think they're just trying to get rid of it and utilize it in society, but you're right. And it's definitely, I like you write in your book that it's like this white gunk it's clogging us up. It's really quite interesting. Let's talk about fish. It's a topic that, among many other living creatures, you devote space to in your book, and it's a topic that sometimes gets brushed aside when we are talking about the welfare of food animals. So here's a big question that for some reason is a popular one among our society: can and do fish feel pain?
A lot of research has been going on in the last 10 or 15 years that is surprising scientists, because people sort of thought that fish don't feel pain, that they're not intelligent, that they're just sort of these cold-blooded creatures that really don't have much purpose in life other than to be eaten by humans or by other fish or animals. And the research that's being done now is showing what I think we all know in our bones, which is that these are living beings who have a fully developed central nervous system, mm-hmm. With receptors like we have to feel pain. They're mobile creatures. They're absolutely as sensitive as we are, and especially around their mouths, where they really interact with the world so much. They have a lot of nerve sensors there. So to say that they're not feeling pain when they're hooked, for example, is patently absurd, and researchers now are of course, saying that that would be excruciatingly painful. It would be the same thing, some researchers say, as being drilled by a dentist without any painkiller. I mean, it's just totally painful. And also, very interestingly, they are increasingly seen to be highly intelligent animals, with some researchers saying they have intelligence basically at the level of non-human primates, like chimpanzees and monkeys and other gorillas and so forth. And they use tools. They use secondary tools, actually, tools to make tools or tools to use other tools. Recently, invertebrate animals like octopus and mm-hmm. so forth are seen to use tools. And
yes.
So they have very complex social relationships. They have a purpose for their lives. They've been on the planet longer than any other animal, so they've had longer to increase their intelligence. And I think it's another example of people, when we harm them, we would rather think that they're not sensitive to that, but it's just not true.
So what about religious traditions and animals? Specifically, I'd like to talk about Christian traditions and how they historically support the protection of animals. And what would you say to a Christian today who eats animals and how that affects their religious beliefs?
You know, the essence of the Christian religion, I think like all religions, is to be kind to others. And to, what Jesus was talking about over and over again was deepening our relationship with what we call God, the creator of all life. And if someone is serious about that, I think we're naturally drawn to respect the creation of God, the creation, this beautiful earth, the beauty of trees and forests and of oceans and rivers and fields and birds and fish and all animals. And I think as we're drawn forward and onward in our spiritual path, if we're Christians or really I think on any religious tradition, we begin to become more sensitive to the beauty of life, and there's this natural yearning that we have to protect life and to celebrate life and to enjoy this beautiful creation and contribute to the healing of our world. And Satanism or the sort of the demonic dimension that we see, it's always the same thing. It's always destruction for one's own purpose, using for one's own purpose, violence for the benefit of oneself. These are always seen as the antithesis of spirituality. And so for people to use the teachings of Jesus, who is, they believe, the incarnation of divine love, as an excuse to pay people to hyper-confine and mutilate and stab and terrorize and brutalize other beings for one's own unnecessary benefit, it's really utterly, it's almost completely unbelievable, really, in the sense of it makes one's religion completely ironic. It's like, well, we believe this, but we do this. So we're not living the teachings that we profess. And I think that dimension of not living the teachings that we profess is what creates this underlying feeling of guilt that people have. And we're all hoping that if we believe, you know, a certain set of beliefs, then we'll be somehow relieved of our guilt. And the guilt comes from killing so many animals unnecessarily. And so I think veganism is really the foundation of true spiritual growth, because it puts us into alignment with the radical loving kindness and inclusion that people like Jesus have said are the foundation of religion, and that we say they live, and they live this. They actually were healing people and questioning the violence in their societies. I think we're called to do the same thing today.
Moving on, I'd like to ask you about some of the other aspects of your life before we close this interview. You've been touring and speaking all over the United States for many, many years now, and I know that you have a very busy tour schedule. Are you still constantly on the road giving workshops and lectures?
Yes, we are still doing that. We really enjoy it. We live in a solar-powered RV, and we just drove, actually, from one place in Northern California to another. We're going up to the Farm Sanctuary in Orland, California, where I'll be speaking there at a thing they have called the Hoedown. And the animals who have been basically liberated from animal agriculture. And then we'll be speaking at some other events in Northern California and then down in Southern California. So we're basically doing the best we can, I guess, to try to bring this message to people in a way that they can hear it.
You do a lot of speaking at churches, too. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, I'll be speaking pretty much every Sunday morning. I give the talk at a church, a Unitarian or Unity. Usually they're more progressive churches, typically.
So how do you integrate speaking about veganism and animal rights in your sessions, such as when you're speaking at the churches?
That's a great question. I try to basically bring in the fundamental teachings that we know in our bones that our happiness comes from connecting with our own meaning and purpose, and that our meaning and purpose is to bless the world, to find our unique way of blessing the world, and that we're all born into a culture that in many ways distracts us from that and implants into all of us attitudes and ways of being that are in totally contradictory to that. So then I bring in the idea that when we look at animals merely as things to be used, or when we look at humans as merely as things to be used, we're sowing seeds of violence. And I try to do it in a way where I'm telling my own story, and in a way that is not causing people to feel that I'm in any way judging them or blaming them, because I'm really not. I understand we're born into a culture, mm-hmm. we're forced to participate from the time we're born practically in violence through food. And so when people start to see that it's not their choice, no one who's eating meat, dairy products, or eggs is ever doing it from their own free choice. They're doing it for just one reason, because they've been born into a community mm-hmm. where they've been forced to do that by every institution in that community and in that culture. And then people don't feel judged, and then I think there's space for them to begin to move. And then very often people will buy my book. I think it's... that's much better, because I usually only have 20 or 30 minutes at the most to talk, and the World Peace Diet is about 13 and a half hours long, you know, so
of reading?
It needs them. Yeah, right. What I mean is the audio book is 13 and a half hours uh-huh. long, and so to really get into all the different dimensions of this subject, it takes quite a bit of time. That people can take that home and sit in their privacy, their own room, living room or bedroom or whatever, and read it and contemplate and reflect. And I get a lot of emails from people saying, you know, when I first heard about this, I just had such a hard time, but when I read your book and started reflecting on it, then I realized how true it is, and I've become a vegetarian, I've become a vegan. And that's what I think it's all about, is for people to have the chance to reflect on these ideas and realize that all of us can make a positive change.
Mm-hmm. And quick question, do you ever come to Canada?
We would love to come to Canada. We have not really made it up there in many, many years. Since the book has come out, I have not been to Canada, I'm sorry to say. So we're hoping to come to Vancouver area at some point. I'm not exactly sure when. We've also been invited by people in Toronto, too. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of getting the logistics. Our schedule's really busy, and it's a little bit out of the way, but I would love to come to Canada, really. It would be great.
That's wonderful. I think we have to wrap up now. This has been great. Thank you so much, Dr. Tuttle, for returning to the Animal Voices show today. I just want to take this time to strongly encourage everyone to get a copy of this must-read book. The World Peace Diet is probably the best book I've ever read, and I really think that every human being needs to read this book. You can easily purchase it on Amazon, and it's also available for free as a PDF at www.worldpeacediet.org/download.htm. You can also visit Will Tuttle's website at worldpeacediet.com for information on his book, his music, his lectures, and much more. So once again, Dr. Tuttle, I really thank you for coming on the show again. It's been really informative, and you just really have a lot of good stuff to say.
Well, thank you so much. There's never seems to be enough time, but hopefully we were
come
able
back
to
again walk. Then one time.
Great. I'd love to.
Okay. Thank you. Take care.
Yeah. Bye.
You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver. Remember to sign up for our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. Join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show, either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. So we are still doing our membership drive, and this is the last day for it. And just a little bit about Co-op Radio. I'm going on air at Hastings and Maine in April 1975. Vancouver Co-op Radio has been broadcasting community-driven radio for the people, by the people, for 35 years. Co-op Radio, CFRO, is the only member-owned independent radio station in Vancouver and one of the longest-running non-commercial radio stations in Canada. In recognition of the station's 35th birthday in April 15, 2010, was proclaimed Vancouver Co-op Radio Day in Vancouver.
Yeah, I didn't know that until I read that this week. Cool,
that's
huh?
Amazing,
we have some history here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
So please do pledge. Next week on the show, please join us again, and we'll be interviewing Twyla Francois from Canadian for the Ethical Treatment of Food Animals about her recent investigation of horse slaughterhouses in Canada. We'll also be joined by Josh Harper, an activist involved in the Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty Campaign. Joshua was one of the six members known as Shack 7, a group of activists who were found guilty of multiple federal felonies for their alleged role in campaigning to close down the notorious animal testing Huntington Life Sciences.
Josh Harper is the one that was released several years ago, was it? Or
yeah, he was recently released from his 3-year jail sentence.
Yeah, that'll be really interesting. And again, just to get your membership for Co-op Radio and to support Animal Voices, please go to cooperadio.org, or if you give us a couple minutes, you can call 604-684-8494, extension 230. When we've got a song coming up.
And it's the cow song by Dr. Will Tuttle.
In recognition of Cow Ribbon Day. So remember, get your cow ribbon, cowribbon.com. Here's cow song by Dr. Will Tuttle.
See
Talk to you next week.